stock market triple play with the three major indexes closing out Thursday's session at all-time highs, boosted by strong results from department stores and a surge in oil prices.
The department store chain hasn't said yet which stores are going to shut down or if store workers will lose their jobs. Macy's reps say increased competition from other retailers like H&M and TJ Maxx are to blame for its slumping sales.
The company is going to focus more on its online business.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09 and it is Friday. It's August 12th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. It's Friday. We made it through the week. I think we all deserve a gold medal for this week. It seems like it has been a long, strenuous week on the track and wherever else you have been competing this week, in the pits, wherever. Everybody gets a gold medal as we head into Friday. We have a big show for you today. Later in the program yesterday, some new research, national research released about the effectiveness of programs that help homelessness, prevent homelessness. We will be talking with the study's author. This report just released. It is connected to Chicago in a big way, and we'll have that later. And Paul Nolte is here as well. We're going to be going over some of the economic news from the week, get your portfolio in shape as we head into the weekend. But first, let's head to the WGN Market Desk. Here's your overnight intel. Asian shares rose today, tracking the rally in U.S. stocks that was driven mainly by strong gains by energy companies and retailers. Macy's leading the charge. Rising oil prices also lifted sentiment. Retailers' earnings fueled optimism for the U.S. government's latest monthly tally of retail sales coming later today. The Dow Jones Industrials finished today, yesterday 117 points to the positive. The NASDAQ was up just a little bit as well, S&P 2. After really historic highs this week on the S&P, especially benchmark U.S. crude oil is at $43.50 a barrel, or at least was the last time I checked this morning. The dollar gained against the yen and fell against the euro. Here's what's coming today besides the retail sales report. JCPenney is going to be reporting its financial results before the market opens. The Labor Department's also going to release the producer price index for July. All of that happening this morning could drive the markets as we move through today. JCPenney was one of the retail stocks yesterday that was buoyed by Macy's. A lot of the retail sector stocks were pushed up by Macy's. At one point, Macy's shares up about 16% in trading after they reported okay revenue, but the markets were also looking at the fact they're going to close 100 stores. We still don't have a full list of those stores, but they say they're going to be mainline stores that they just don't need as they try to trim 100 their 700 stores. And that transitions us nicely into Paul Nolte this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve.
Paul is a chartered financial analyst, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, and he's with us every Friday. What were you watching yesterday in the markets? Was it all Macy's all day?
It really was. Really, when we take a look, for us, it was kind of a one-off. We've been kind of focused on the international markets and energy prices. Energy prices have come down probably 15-20% from the peaks of maybe 8 weeks ago or so. Macy's was an interesting number in the fact that they were closing a bunch of stores. That's good for their bottom line, cut a lot of expenses out of their corporate structure. But the key was that they beat expectations. And that's really what's required on Wall Street, not necessarily to do well, but just to beat expectations.
And also yesterday, Nordstrom reported after the closing bell yesterday, they did a little bit better than they had in the previous quarters as well. They reported second quarter earnings of $117 million. We'll see what JCPenney does today. But if people are thinking about buying shares in these companies in the retail sector, what would you tell them?
Keep an eye on Amazon. They're the 800-pound gorilla. Their revenue growth is phenomenal at this point. And really, when you look at the retailers, it is true that most of people buy stuff at stores. But that number is declining. The percentage of overall retail that happens online, Amazon, et cetera, is growing. And so it's a smaller part of the pie that a lot of these retailers are fighting for at this point. And that's part of the reason why Macy's is going deeper into their online. Walmart is doing the same type of thing. So a lot of people are moving more online. less direct retail.
And Macy's seems to be coming to the realization it can't have all these stores. And is that really what drove their rise yesterday? Not necessarily the earnings, was the 100 stores being closed?
I think to a certain extent, you know, because again, when you look at some of the stores that they do have, it's, you know, you walk in and you have a lot of people working there and five people wandering the store that they're, you know, wandering around and trying to help. So it's tough for a lot of the big old line retailers to compete in this world.
Tumbleweeds rolling down the aisles.
You get sprayed a lot.
Yeah, never your own size that you need there. And that brings us to that part of that is, what is the model? I mean, have you been able to grasp what the model might be for some of these brick-and-mortar stores?
You know, I think what a lot of people do for the everyday type of stuff, so, you know, what I would call like the dog food or, you know, that type of thing, it really doesn't matter. I know what I want, and I can go ahead and get it online. I can buy it, and it'll show up on my doorstep the next day. Clothing might be a little bit different. You know, I like to try on a clothing. You know, this is a little different size than somebody else. So I want to try that on. But that being said, once I do that and I know J. Crew is, you know, fits me this way for this size, I can go online and I can order a mess of shirts that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there will still be a spot for people going into a store to go do something, but I think a lot of people will be shopping more and more online. So it's, again, for the old line retailer, the brick and mortar, they're going to be fighting over a much smaller pie over the next decade or so.
The story I always tell people, the last time I went to a men's store to buy clothing, the salesperson who worked on commission actually suggested that I go home and go online to try to find the colors and types that I wanted because they didn't have them in the stores.
And like I said, so you're gonna be able to do that. It helps from the manufacturing perspective because, again, you're going to be able to pick and choose. And I can't physically carry that kind of inventory at the store level. It's just it's wasted space. And online, I don't have to worry about it because I can. It's just in time inventory. Once you push the button buy, then that gets created and sent out to you.
And, you know, we have a lot of laws in this country, but I would love to see a law that says every size that says extra large has to be extra large. They all have to be the same, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I know in women's sizes, there's now zero size, which, again, I have girls, and I'm a little bit more in tune to this than maybe some. But the old sizes don't work anymore. So I don't know if you've been downsized, upsized, or what, but zero size.
That's odd.
So for me, that's just strange.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors hoping to continue the momentum today after all three major indices reached all-time highs on Thursday, bolstered by strong retail earnings reports, a rebound in oil prices, and data showing the Labor Department remains strong. Shares of Macy's soared more than 17% after the retailer posted better-than-expected quarterly profit and sales and announced plans to close about 100 stores in 2017. The department store chain continues to downsize amid tough online competition. And iPhone fans will probably have to wait another year for a major overhaul to the smartphone, but the company is moving quickly on changes to its MacBook computers. Bloomberg reporting that the new MacBooks will have a thinner body, a touchscreen for function keys, and an upgrade for graphics processors. The deep-fried Twinkie is jumping from the state fair to the freezer. Hostess Brands launching packaged deep-fried Twinkies starting Friday that mark its first foray into frozen foods, a partnership with Walmart, which will be selling them. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 522. Welcome back to the program. Paul Nolte is with us from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, I saw yesterday some analysts on Wall Street saying we might actually hit 20,000 on the Dow, and at the same time, them talking about our 401ks over the last 10 years, giving us a snapshot of them not doing so well, not growing as much as the Dow. Is there a disconnect there, and why aren't we making as much as the investors are?
Well, you know, there is a little bit of a disconnect between 401k and what's happened in the marketplace, and part of that has been over the last 7-8 years, certainly since the bottom in 2009, the best performing asset class has been the S&P 500. And so if you have a diversified portfolio, you have some small cap, you have some international emerging markets, and then throw bonds in there, you're going to underperform. And so 5% rate of return might be a little bit on the low side. And we're in that period now where we're expecting going forward a very low return environment. And we've been talking about interest rates and the 10-year bond at 1.5%. It's going to be hard to get 5%. On the equity side, given the fact that we've already gone up so much and valuations are pretty stretched. So what's interesting, too, is they talk about the Dow hitting 20,000. That's roughly 10% from where we are today, a little less than that. So, again, that's okay. What happens after that? Do we get a 10 to 15% pullback? But, you know, again, when the markets are rising, those numbers in the future go higher. I remember in 2000, we were talking Dow 36,000 because things were going so well. We'll get there, but earnings have to support it, and that's really more the key.
So if that's the case, why don't we better question, how do we make more money in our portfolios?
Well, I mean, diversified portfolio still makes a lot of sense because, again, you don't want to have all your eggs in that S&P basket. That goes back to the discussion in 2000. Everybody had their portfolio in technology because technology was doing wonderfully well, and then watch it go down by 50% over the next 2 to 3 years. So, again, a diversified portfolio makes sense. It's going to smooth out all the peaks and valleys in the markets and give you that consistency. So really when we talk to clients, we talk about what is it that you need in the way of a rate of return for you to get to wherever it is you want to be. How, you know, what kind of income do you need and so on. And we back into that number or come back and say, you know, you're going to have to save more money in order to get to the lifestyle that you want to in retirement.
And so one of the points here then is, you know, we tell people hire Paul, don't look at your portfolio, don't go over it crazy, you know, crazily and worry and be one of those people, but look at it more than every 5 years. You can't just put it and leave it, right?
Well, certainly in the 401k, when we talk to, in talking to a lot of people, it tends to be a fix it and forget it portfolio. I started with the firm 10 years ago. I got my 401k. I checked off these boxes and I haven't looked at it since. And I think you need to take a look at it quarterly, semi-annually, and make some adjustments as you go through time. Certainly, you want to be a little bit more conservative as you get older. And what happens is with a 401k, you sign up as you're in your 20s and 30s, you're pretty aggressive. You don't look at it for 15 to 20 years, and you're surprised when the markets pull back how much money you lost in your 401k because there were no adjustments made. So absolutely, it's one of, next to real estate, the largest holding that a lot of people have. But it's one, too, that tends to get ignored because it's just there. It goes out of my paycheck every month. I don't think about it, but it's something that they certainly should keep an eye on as you go through time.
And the notion of diversification, this is not something that I should be doing without any knowledge of picking things. This is why it's important to have a portfolio manager.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the things, again, diversification makes sense from the perspective of you want to have a little bit of money in different buckets. And that goes back to the philosophy of, again, trying to smooth out those returns and what makes sense in the environment that we're in. So today's environment, different than 10 years ago, different than 15, 20 years ago. And so your portfolio needs to adjust and change a little bit with the times and realize that the same portfolio mix 20 years ago may not work in this environment. You're going to need to do things a little differently today than maybe you did 20 years ago.
So big plans for the weekend. What are you going to be?
We're going to be kind of chilling this weekend, coming off of vacation last week. So we're getting everybody geared up to get back to college. So we'll be empty nesters for the first time, and that should be an interesting dynamic in our household.
And I bet you've been watching a lot of swimming this weekend, Doug.
A lot of swimming. So it's been a lot of fun watching the Olympics.
Paul Nolte, good to have you here as always. Thanks for calming us down a little bit and getting us ready for the weekend. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. One social network is putting abuse prevention in the hand of users. Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, is looking to combat online harassment by giving its users the power to filter out certain words or phrases from its comment section. Dana Wollman is with the tech blog Engadget.
I can add certain trigger words that if someone attempts to write a comment with those words, the comment just will be blocked and won't appear. But that's a game of whack-a-mole, right?
So if controlling the tone of the discussion beneath each image isn't good enough, users will also be able to prevent comments altogether on certain posts. But Wollman says that's got a downside, too.
I think it'll be nice to be able to turn off comments on a given post, but the unfortunate thing there is that would also screen out well-meaning comments from people I really like in real life, like my friends.
The new features are already available to high-profile celebrity accounts, and Instagram hopes to roll it out to just plain other users over the next few weeks. With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37 as we continue with our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. New research released yesterday in a study that spanned a year or more and focused on Chicago has some results, surprising results, significant results about homelessness and prevention programs in place to help people who are about to become homeless. Funding that is in Illinois being cut because of budget problems, in other states also being cut because of budget problems. Programs like this involving agencies like Catholic Charities and others are programs that keep people from becoming homeless. The research released yesterday includes Notre Dame researcher James Sullivan, who is with us via Skype this morning from Notre Dame in South Bend. And Professor Sullivan, I guess my first question is, what did the study show? What did the research show you and other people about these homelessness prevention programs?
Sure. So the key question that our study wanted to address was, does providing emergency financial assistance to people who are on the brink of homelessness effectively reduce the likelihood that they're going to become homeless? And it's an interesting question because we provide this kind of financial assistance in cities all across the country. And we really don't know the extent to which this has any impact at all. And it really was a unique opportunity where we worked with Catholic Charities of Chicago, who runs the Homeless Prevention Call Center, that we were able to study the impact of this. And what we did was compare people who call on a day when there are funds available for assistance to people who call on a day when no funds are available. And we just looked at whether or not if you call on a day when funds are available, are you less likely to show up in the intake data for the homeless shelters in the city of Chicago? And that's a kind of a novel approach to studying this program. In fact, there's been very little research on the impacts of these kinds of programs. And so it really allowed us to provide the first evidence on the impact.
And the impact was what you found, again, what was the that you found with this?
Yeah, so the results are really quite striking, that if you happen to call on a day when funds are available, you're significantly less likely to show up in a shelter. The difference is you're 76% less likely to show up in a shelter than if you happen to call on a day when funds are not available. And so what that shows is that the funding really does have an impact on the likelihood you become homeless. And to be clear, the group that is calling and is eligible for this assistance are people who are really at risk of becoming homeless. They are current renters or homeowners who have documented evidence of being on the brink of homelessness. So, for example, they might have a 15-day eviction notice. And this financial assistance provides one-time help for them to stay in their residence so they can right the ship and avoid becoming homeless in the long run.
How many people did you study, and how long did this project go on? Because people will ask, are the findings sound?
Yes. So the call center processes about 75,000 calls a year, but it turns out that most of the people who are calling for assistance for one reason or another are not eligible for the assistance. And so when you get down to the sample that we looked at, between 2010 and 2012, it was over 4,500 callers who were seeking financial assistance. And about two-thirds of those callers were lucky enough to call on a day when funding was available, while the remaining called when funds weren't available, because there simply aren't enough resources at the Homeless Prevention Call Center to give assistance to everybody who calls.
Give our listeners a sense of how much money we're talking about here per person per call.
So the typical caller is calling for assistance for paying 1 month's rent. And many funds that support this won't pay for more than 1 month's rent. And so the average amount of assistance that a caller seeking rent assistance gets is around $1,000, just under $1,000.
And so with these findings in hand, what will this now show and what do you hope will be the end result?
So there's been a kind of a long-running debate about what is the best way to reduce the ranks of the homeless in the United States. And, you know, there's a group that says that to avoid reduce the ranks of the homeless, you want to avoid having homelessness happen in the first place. So this is the idea of preventing homelessness. And then there's another group that says, well, it's really hard to prevent homelessness because we don't know who's really on the brink. And so what we should do is wait till they become homeless and then provide assistance with housing and other services once they become homeless. And what our study shows is that homelessness prevention efforts through the form of emergency financial assistance really can be effective, that it does have a significant impact on reducing the likelihood of one becoming homeless. And the effect is large enough to justify the cost so that it ends up can save a community money because once somebody becomes homeless, it becomes very expensive to provide the services they need to get back and stably housed. And so the one important implication of this research is that it supports broader provision of homelessness prevention efforts, such as emergency financial assistance. I said that they have call centers all across the country that link callers to emergency financial assistance, but many of these centers are considerably underfunded. And so this research suggests that we should be investing more resources in these kinds of prevention efforts.
Is there a number, have scientists like yourself put a number on what it would cost to avoid homelessness on a per-person basis?
Yeah, so we did that calculation, and based on our estimates, the number comes to a little over $10,000. And so why is that so expensive to get somebody to avoid homelessness? And the reason is that you end up having to give out resources to a number of people who would not have become homeless even if you didn't give them the money before you give it to somebody who actually does need the money, although otherwise they'd become homeless. And so that's that idea of it's a challenge to target it to the people who truly are on the brink of homelessness for whom the resources would really make a difference. And so it's hard to target it perfectly, but even with this rough targeting, and so the cost ends up being about $10,000, we show that it's cost effective in the sense that the cost savings that results from this kind of intervention by avoiding a bout of homelessness, cost savings far exceeds the investment that you're putting in.
This research found that some of the people that did called and were not referred for financial assistance still managed to avoid homeless somehow. How did they do that?
We don't have specific information from the people in our sample, but we know a lot of information about how these families make ends meet on a day-to-day basis. And so if you were turned down for emergency financial assistance from the call center, you might then go seek assistance from other social service agencies. You might go seek assistance from family or friends. Maybe it's not financial assistance. A lot of these people could very well have gone and went to live with family and friends or moved into a different residence because they couldn't pay the rent in their current unit.
This is a timely discussion because in states like Illinois, we have been fighting this budget battle. We barely have money. We don't have money to pay our bills. And usually when that happens, social service programs like these are generally the first that get cut. This sort of shows us how important those first responder programs, if you will, are.
Absolutely. And I know from my conversations with social service providers in Chicago, that they really are struggling to maintain the budgets for these kinds of programs. And so this information becomes all the more important because, given the shortage of resources to help those in need, it becomes all the more important to target those resources towards programs that have proven effectiveness. And this Homeless Prevention Call Center is one such program.
And these programs, as you mentioned, are in place pretty much all over the country. I want to go back to something that you touched on, just so our listeners get a sense of it. That is the cost of helping people initially with programs like this and the cost later to society of homelessness.
Yes. As I said earlier, I mentioned the cost of avoiding a new spell of homelessness is at about $10,000 through emergency financial assistance such as this. But the cost savings far exceed that. And the reason why there is considerable cost savings is because it's so expensive to serve those people who become homeless. Now, that includes the cost of providing shelter to these individuals or families, but it also includes the other services that they will need once they become homeless or might be eligible for. So these could be government programs such as welfare or food stamps, or publicly provided health insurance, but also we know that those who become homeless are at much greater risk of having other bad events. So, for example, they're more likely to show up in a emergency room, which is an additional cost to a community. And actually, their mortality rates are much higher for those who are homeless than people who look similar to the homeless, but are not homeless, are otherwise stably housed.
James Sullivan, an assistant associate professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, also with the Wilson Sheehan Lab for Economic Opportunities there. The study on homelessness covered Chicago, involved Chicago's Catholic Charities, a study published yesterday in Science. You can find out more, follow Notre Dame University at Notre Dame, and find more on the study at Science Mag, also for the latest on this study. Again, joining us via Skype from South Bend.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:52 on the WGN market desk this morning. The Dow futures are pointing up about 12 points. S&P NASDAQ futures up just a bit as well. Commodities now. Orion Samuelson is with us for a Friday chat. Orion, I don't know about you, but that butter cow is beautiful. I just saw a picture of it.
Well, I will see the butter cow on Tuesday because Tuesday at the Illinois State Fair is their Salute to Agriculture Day, and so I'll be emceeing the breakfast in the morning, and then, of course, the big event, sale of the Grand Champions, the governor's sale of Grand Champions, beginning with commodities that are being judged, and it will probably include some dairy products, and also the Grand Champion animals will be auctioned off. 4-H and FFA kids will be looking again to some pretty good money coming for these champion animals because it'll definitely go into their college funds. So, yeah, it's been an event. Well, I've been going to the fair for over 50 years, and it's always a big attraction in the dairy building, and so I hope it will. Well, I know it will be this year as well.
Give us a sense of, because I think a lot of us who are not in agriculture may take this event for granted, but this is a huge event where agriculture is concerned. Tell us about the impact that this one single event has on the industry.
Well, it has the big impact because it brings city and farm people together. Mm-hmm. And at the Illinois State Fair, you find and every other state fair, Wisconsin is winding up this weekend, Iowa is underway, Indiana goes through a week from Sunday. And the thing that it does, it brings city people together with farm people. It gives 4-H and FFA kids who have worked all year long on whatever project, whether it's making clothing or shooting photography or fitting cattle, hogs, sheep, chickens, rabbits, or whatever for the show ring. It's the Super Bowl for these 4-H and FFA kids, and it is their opportunity to show off what they've done for the past year. But I always say they have stage entertainment, but the greatest drama you're going to see will be in the show ring when you see a 97-pound 4-H girl leading around a 1,300-pound steer and making sure it behaves in the eyes of the judges, and hopefully we'll get that grand champion ribbon. That is drama if you want to see something happen. It would be the Olympics for these farm kids.
Yeah, and it's and not only that, they're good corn dogs and lemon shakeups too. And the butter cow, I didn't realize this, that the butter cow is the most photographed thing at the Illinois State Fair.
I did not realize that, but it does not surprise me. And in the dairy building, and I always get to the dairy building, of course, not only to see the butter cow, but to enjoy the ice cream. They serve some of the best ice cream and milkshakes and all of those things from the dairy industry. And so, yeah, the dairy building is one of my first stops when I get to State Fair. One of the things they've added to the State Fair in almost every state now is competition for winemakers, because we're making wine in just about every state in the union, and they have a pretty good wine show at Illinois too. So,
and the other part of this is you mentioned that we get to mix with some of the city folk as well. I don't know if most people know this, but I grew up in a farm community, so I don't consider myself necessarily a city guy. But it's one of those things where if you have concerns or questions about how your food is being raised, this is the place to go and learn how it's done.
Absolutely, and even if you've grown up on a farm, it is so different today than it was when you grew up, certainly different than when I grew up on the dairy farm in Wisconsin. And so even if you think you know farming, you may not if you haven't talked to a farmer for the last 10 years or so. One other thing I have to mention before we go. Today is a big report day in the world of agriculture, and the world will be watching as the Department of Agriculture issues the first real crop report of the season. Today we get our first look at what they say will be the size of the crop, the yield per acre, and so far everything I've seen indicates that we are on the way to a record year. We have never produced as much as we are producing at the moment. So that'll be out at 11 o'clock this morning when it hits the trading floor at the Board of Trade.
And we will have it for you right here on 720 WGN. Ori and Samuelson, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too, Steve.
All right. Bye. And we'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning here on 720 WGN. Back Monday with another edition of The Opening Bell. Have a great day, everybody.